And now from M.R. James.
Rats. And if you was to walk through the bedrooms now, you'd see the ragged, mouldy bedclothes a-heaving and a-heaving like seas.
And a-heaving and a-heaving with what? He says.
Why, with the rats under 'em.
But was it with the rats? I ask because in another case it was not. I cannot put a date to the story, but I was young when I heard it, and the teller was old. It is an ill-proportioned tale, but that is my fault, not his. It happened in Suffolk, near the coast. In a place where the road makes a sudden dip and then a sudden rise, as you go northward, at the top of that rise, stands a house on the left of the road. It is a tall red brick house, narrow for its height. Perhaps it was built about 1770. The top of the front has a low triangular pediment with a round window in the centre. Behind it are stables and offices, and such garden as it has is behind them. Scraggy Scotch firs are near it. An expanse of gorse-covered land stretches away from it. It commands a view of the distant sea from the upper windows of the front. A sign on a post stands before the door, or did so stand, for though it was an inn of repute once, I believe it is so no longer. To this inn came my acquaintance, Mr. Thompson, when he was a young man, on a fine spring day, coming from the University of Cambridge, and desirous of solitude in tolerable quarters and time for reading. These he found, for the landlord and his wife had been in service and could make a visitor comfortable, and there was no one else staying in the inn. He had a large room on the first floor, commanding the road and the view, and if it faced east, why, that could not be helped. The house was well built and warm. He spent very tranquil and uneventful days. Work all the morning, an afternoon perambulation of the country round, a little conversation with country company or the people of the inn in the evening over the then fashionable drink of brandy and water, a little more reading and writing, and bed. And he would have been content that this should continue for the full month he had at disposal. So well was his work progressing, and so fine was the April of that year, which I have reason to believe was that which Orlando Whistlecraft chronicles in his weather record as the charming year. One of his walks took him along the northern road, which stands high and traverses a wide common called a heath. On the bright afternoon when he first chose this direction, his eye caught a white object some hundreds of yards to the left of the road, and he felt it necessary to make sure what this might be. It was not long before he was standing by it, and found himself looking at a square block of white stone, fashioned somewhat like the base of a pillar, with a square hole in the upper surface. Just such another you may see at this day on Thetford Heath. After taking stock of it, he contemplated for a few minutes the view, which offered a church tower or two, some red roofs of cottages and windows winking in the sun, and the expanse of sea, also with an occasional wink and gleam upon it, and so pursued his way. In the desultory evening talk in the bar, he asked why the white stone was there on the common.
"A old-fashioned thing, that is," said the landlord, Mr. Betts. "We was none of us alive when that was put there."
"That's right," said another.
"It stands pretty high," said Mr. Thompson. "I dare say a sea mark was on it some time back."
"Ah, yes," Mr. Betts agreed. "I have heard they could see it from the boats, but whatever there was, it's fell to bits this long time."
"Good job, too," said a third. "'Twan't a lucky mark, by what the old men used to say. Not lucky for the fishing, I mean to say."
"Why ever not?" said Thompson.
"Well, I never see it myself," was the answer. "But they had some funny ideas, what I mean, peculiar, them old chaps. And I shouldn't wonder but what they made away with it theirselves."